Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Know-How is brought to you by Carbonite. Automatically and continually back up your computer files to the cloud whenever you're connected to the internet for only $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com and use the offer code Know-How to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
Today, Leo's going to show me how to use this thing.
This week, we'll know how to use your digital camera to its fullest. Doodle-dat-doo-boo-boo. Welcome to Know How. I, as Actar, your host. I'm just your patsy.
Well, today you're an expert, Leo.
Well, yeah, today I'm going to be the guest, I guess, because we're going to talk about digital photography and not so much how to get better pictures. We've done that for a long time on many shows, including Twit Photo,
right.
Chris Marquardt, the photo guy on the radio show. But what we don't do much is explain what all these terms mean.
And one of the things is, when I used to use my cameras, I could never dream to get a DSLR, an SLR back in the day, because they were crazy expensive.
Oh, yeah.
And now a lot of things have changed. Even your apps these days are super powerful. You can add things like, you can change ISO, which I don't know what that is. You can change your f-stop and all kinds of things in these apps on your Android phones or your iOS devices. And I'm just kind of curious what's going on with this. I came from, like, a video background.
Look at that.
Does
anybody buy camcorders anymore?
Well,
that's a pretty prosumer device.
Yeah,
though.
This I grabbed from Twit. Now, one of the things that I used to do with video...
Really, that's ours?
Yeah, this is one of the ones we use for our little reviews on Before You Buy. And if you look on the side here, it says 3CCD. This is something I actually learned about when I was always behind a camera. There's a difference between the image sensor in these cameras and in your SLRs. I always did video, so I always hated CMOS. Brian, we had this great video showing the difference between CCD and CMOS. Now, these are the types of image sensor, and it shows you how the video is actually recorded on the medium.
This is from B&H, which is a great place to buy pro gear. In a film camera, the way a camera worked, you had a lens which had a shutter on it.
Mm-hmm.
You'd open up the shutter, you'd let light in, it would strike film, which was a special kind of...
photoreactive material.
That's a good way to describe it. Yeah, photoreactive material. The light would hit it. It would capture an image. You'd then process the film, develop it, and print it. You'd make a negative and print through the negative onto a piece of paper. And that was the process of making an image. The film is replaced now by a different kind of photo responsive material. That's CMOS or CCD.
Mm-hmm. And so if we show the video again, you'll see what CMOS does when it does an image. It actually is using a rolling shutter. So what happens is the image is captured from top to bottom. And if you have a 3CCD camera like I had here for video, you'll see on the top video, you see this is
that's
rolling.
CMOS.
That's CMOS.
Yeah.
And up here is a global
just
shutter.
Captures the pixels.
It looks like it's fading in because it's taking in all the light at one time.
Yeah.
And if you do video, that's extraordinarily helpful because when you use your DSLR for video, you might start seeing something called the rolling shutter effect. It's when all these straight lines start looking like jello. It's also called tearing, all kinds of words for that. But I would love to know what on earth to do with all of these functions on a DSLR, because the thing is, you can do lots of things with them now, and they've come down in price so much. And then all these other options with the Micro Four Thirds cameras out there without the mirrors. So they're getting much more affordable, and those functions are on apps.
Yeah.
Leo, you know everything about this. I've seen you walk around all day with these beautiful
cameras. I
wouldn't
say I know everything, but I've sitting in at the feet of so many great photographers now that I've started to absorb a little bit. So you make a good point about CMOS versus CCD. Almost all digital cameras, still cameras now, are CMOS. Mm-hmm. They use CMOS technology. And it has that limitation when it's shooting video, although they've improved it. And the rolling shutter is less of a problem on modern CMOS cameras than it used to be. But it's only a problem when you shoot video, and it's not a huge issue. So here's a couple of removable lens cameras. You used to call them SLRs, but they're not, strictly speaking, SLRs, at least not always. SLR, single lens reflex, means you have a mirror in the body. You look through a viewfinder on the camera, and what you're looking through is the actual lens. So you're seeing the picture as it's going to be taken. And that's a nice way to take a picture. Your point-and-shoot cameras, of course, kind of do that because they have a video screen and you can look at what the picture is going to be. But older cameras, which didn't have that, you'd be looking through a range finder, which was just looking through a hole at the top of the camera. And you wouldn't get exactly the right thing. So professionals prefer SLRs or have preferred SLRs for a long time so that they see exactly what you're going to shoot. That's changed a little bit. Digital photography now with point-and-shoot cameras, you can see exactly what you're going to get because you're looking at a screen. We still sell digital SLRs with mirrors, but I think they're on their way out.
Speaking of SLRs, I found this application for iPad. It's called the SLR Simulator because I want to know what these terms are because you can spend a lot of money on these devices and you're like, how do I use it? So if you can see the screen behind me, we got these pictures of puppies. And this application is free. It's for iPad, and we'll have a link at twit.tv/KH. And what it lets you do is you can select ISO, and what I can do is I can slide this around. You'll see the difference. Now, Leo, all I'm seeing is that when I move the shutter from left to right, changing the number from 250 to 500, it just gets darker. And if I do that with ISO, it gets darker.
Remember what we talked about, how a camera works. There is something that's going to translate that light, in the case of a digital camera, into bits. That's where the film is. There's a shutter that opens and closes, and then there's a lens. So what you're looking at is manipulating different properties of that chain that is part of the picture taking. So let's talk first about the shutter speed. If you think about it, when the shutter opens, it opens for a limited period of time. You've got it set there for a 60th of a second. If you set it for a lower number, it'll be opened for a longer period of time.
And that makes the image brighter?
The more the shutters open, the more light comes in. So exactly right. The image gets brighter. Shutter speed also is relevant if you want to capture motion because, of course, if you have a fast shutter speed, you're capturing a smaller amount of time. If somebody's running or you're watching a football game or there's action, a fast shutter speed, that is 1/500th of a second, 1/1000th of a second, that's going to, of course, limit the amount of light that comes in, but it will freeze the action that's going on. So that's why shutter speed is important. When you're taking pictures of sports, you're going to use a higher shutter speed, or kids, you're going to use a higher shutter speed. There's another issue, which is that there's inevitably, nobody's perfect, some shake when you're holding a camera. Nobody can hold it perfectly still. If it's on a tripod, that doesn't matter. But if you're hand-holding a camera, there's a limit to how still you can hold it. And shutter speed is how you compensate for potential shake. There's a kind of a rule of thumb. It's going to be a little bit complicated. In order to give you the actual rule, I'm going to have to explain something called crop factor. We won't get into that. But let's use the traditional rule of thumb, which is the length of your lens. Let's say you're shooting a 50 millimeter lens. The length of your lens, divide that in half. That gives you the slowest shutter speed you can use without getting shaky, or 1/25th.
Because if you don't use that rule, you'll just have a bunch of blurry photos?
Well, it's just hard. And, you know, you can hold your hands in here like this. I've seen people tie strings around their camera that they hold with their feet, and they make taut with the camera, all of this to hold the camera more still. And, yes, of course, you can get below 1/25th. You can get 1/10th if you can really hold it still. But the rule of thumb is don't try to shoot at anything less than 1/1/2 the focal length of your lens. Now, the reason that that's a little deceptive is because focal lengths are a little bit deceptive. And if you ever ask me what crop factor is, I'll explain that. But we'll save that for a little later on. So that's shutter.
Okay.
Now, you notice there's also aperture.
Yeah, we got aperture up here.
And this also is how much light we let in. We talked about how fast the shutter is open, but we didn't talk about how big the aperture, the opening is. The bigger the opening, the more light, right?
And there's this is measured in, I guess, in functions of F here. I have F over 22 in my F-stop. So the F-stop is related to an aperture?
Yeah, and this is why it's confusing. The higher the number, the smaller the hole. So F22 is, on most lenses, the smallest aperture.
I see.
Expensive lenses can go down to F1.2, F1.4, F1.8. Your typical camera phone is an F2. It's a fixed aperture. You can't change the aperture. But on many cameras, you can. And if you look at the setting, you'll be to change the shutter speed, you'll change the dial on the camera to S, or in the case of Canon, for some reason, TV. And if you're changing the aperture, you want to control the aperture, you'll change it to A, or in the case of Canon, AV. That means you can change the aperture. Now, here's why you might want to do it. Remember, There are three factors that that say how much light you're going to need to make a correctly exposed image. We talked about shutter speed. Mm-hmm. So again, the faster the shutter speed, the less light gets in. We're talking about aperture. The wider the aperture, the more light. The tighter the aperture, the less light. Remember, there's a reason why you'd modify shutter speed. You want to freeze action. There's also a reason why you modify the aperture. A wider aperture means that you're going to have a slimmer focal plane. They call this depth of field.
Okay.
So a high aperture, an f22, everything's going to be crisply in focus from near to far. A low aperture, when you get down to f1.2 or 1.4, means only a very small area is going to be in focus. In fact, f1.2, it's an area that is no more than a millimeter or two thick. So you have to very precisely focus. Professional photographers use this knowledge. A lot of times people who take landscapes and buildings, they want everything to be in focus. They'll use a high aperture, f8 or higher. There's a kind of an old saying that if you're a photojournalist, all you need to do is set it at f8 and be there because everything will be focused. You don't even have to focus the lens. Just take that picture. Anything above f8 is going to probably be in pretty good focus. But if you get below f8, The wider the aperture, the more light you're letting in, the more carefully you're going to have to focus. And you can use that to your advantage because what's in focus is, of course, what your viewer is going to look at. So it's highly used in portraiture mode. You'll use a very wide aperture, an f1.2, 1.4, 1.8, f2, because it will put the subject in focus and the background will be blurry. And you see that a lot.
You think we could show that off on this Canon here?
We could try it. Let's see. So you've got this wired up. Yeah, so let me take a picture of the lovely and talented Iyaz Akhtar. Can you pick up the...
You just got to hit the little camera button.
What the hell am I looking at?
You look on the menu.
I see where I said it. I said it the wrong thing. So let's set this to aperture priority. That means I can adjust the aperture on here. Now, right now, it's set for 1/50 of a second. Is there a lens cap on here?
There's a special button for the camera right there.
I have to turn it.
I was also looking at that. I'm like, I'm overthinking this. There's no function for it. It's simply built in.
There we go. All right. So we see a couple of things here. I can focus, and I'm going to focus on you there. Zoom into you, and I'm going to have the camera focus on you. It's having trouble. Are you...
Is it all the lights?
Are you made out of black velvet?
I happen to be. That's what the beard is made out of.
Yeah.
So that's it. I do buy this.
So notice in the left-hand side we have two numbers. These are critical numbers. There's 60. That means we're shooting at 1/60 of a second. That's the shutter speed.
Okay.
And then there's 5/6. That's the aperture. I can change the aperture. I can make it bigger, f10, and that will mean you're going to be more in focus. In fact, if I shoot this picture at f18, notice it was a long exposure. But everything was in focus. The background was in focus. You were in focus. Now, if I go back here and I set this... By the way, notice that number 18, which is the aperture, as I turn it down, notice the number on the left. To compensate, to make this a good exposure, it's increasing the shutter speed, right? So if I turn the aperture all the way down to the lowest, this will do. And this is a kind of an inexpensive lens. So the aperture can only go to 5.6. On the more expensive lens, you could go lower than this. It made the shutter speed be 1/80 of a second. It also changed the ISO, which we'll talk about.
You want to get
a
capture of this on the board, so this, in case it does that thing.
And I'm going to take a picture. So it's probably not a low enough aperture. Yeah, you saw how quickly that went? That's how quickly it is. But you probably could notice the background was a little soft. On a lens that's made for portraiture, which goes down to an f-stop of 1.2, 1.4, 1.8, the background's going to become very blurry. And sometimes you'll hear the word bokeh. There you go. So you see the back. That's actually a better portrait because it focuses your eye on Iyaz and kind of not so much on the background. On an even wider open f-stop, say a f2, the background would just be blurred. It would just be colors. And you call that bokeh. And the shape of the colors is affected by the blades on the lens. Some lenses have better bokeh than others. That's really a matter of taste. What we are looking at, though, is how you use aperture to control what's in focus in the image. And again, the more narrow the aperture, the higher the number on the f-stop, the more things are in focus. The lower the number, the less. There's a third factor, and I mentioned it, ISO. And that really has to do more with amplification than anything else.
Amplification.
That's something that the camera's doing, if you in film, when you bought a film, it would be set for a certain ISO. They used to call it ASA. That's how sensitive the film was.
Okay.
A film that was like Kodak Tri-X was ASA 400. That meant it was pretty sensitive, so you could use it in lower light situations. Now, of course, we're not using film. The CMOS in here is the same sensitivity all the time, but we can turn up the amplification, and by amplifying it with a higher ISO number, it's adding to the brightness, but it's doing it at a cost. It's adding grain to the image. So there is on almost every camera an optimal ISO, which is usually around 200, not the bottom. It'll go lower than 200.
Yikes. Okay, so not letting a lot of light in.
You'll have to learn. Well, but okay, so go back down to 200.
Go back to 200.
Yeah. And now what you're going to have to do is change the aperture. What will we go? Which direction will we go?
We want more
if it's
light.
Too dark, we're going to have more light, so we're going to go lower way. In the aperture.
More light, smaller
that's
number.
That's one thing that's confusing. A wider aperture is a smaller number.
Actually, this
it's an little, inverse.
Yeah, this little simulator is actually not
it's
bad.
It's a great way to learn. Now, the other thing we could change is shutter speed. Now, those dogs are moving, so we want a pretty fast shutter speed. On a moving object, you want to go 1/250th or even 1/500th. So set it to 1/500th. Oh, what happened? It got darker again. Well, there's a couple of things we can do to compensate that. Let's go all the way down on the aperture.
All the way down the aperture.
So okay. It's still not bright enough. We're going to have to turn up the ISO, amplify the brightness until we get a good picture.
Okay, so
a camera,
a
when it's
better.
On P mode, keep going. It should get as bright. A camera, when it's on P mode, will do that. But notice what happened. You see the grain? Look at the trees.
Yeah, on the top, right there.
They're looking like a pointillist painting. That's over-simulated. Because ISO 1600 on a modern camera, you shouldn't get anywhere near that kind of grain. You can go to 32,000, even 64,000 on modern DSLRs, and with not nearly that kind of grain. But you see, they're overemphasizing, so you can see the consequence. Everything, every one of those three settings can be changed. You manipulate those settings depending on what you're looking for. So if you're in a very dim setting, you need to have the shutter speed fast enough so you can handhold it. But you want the aperture wide open, you might have to turn the ISO up. On those dogs, the reason they have those three dogs in a row, to demonstrate how aperture affects depth of field. If you want all three dogs in focus, what do we do, Ayaz? We're going to have to narrow the aperture, right? A wider aperture will mean that only one of those dogs will be in focus. You may want that. And this is why it's important to know these terms. This gives you creative control as a photographer over what the image is going to look like. The best thing to do is, once you understand this, and this app is great for learning what these things do, once you understand this, then it'd be a really good idea to go out and shoot. Go find a picture where there's things in a row going off into the distance, like these dogs or a fence, and then play with different f-stops to see how it impacts what's in focus and what's not in focus.
So all the stuff, that's the...
Does that make sense?
A lot of it makes sense. I just need to play
it's
with
three,
a lot more.
It's really simple. It's three parameters that are controlling how much light the camera's getting. One is amplification. Just like a volume knob on your stereo, it's turning up the sensitivity or down the sensitivity.
That's ISO.
That's ISO. One is how long the shutter's open to let in light. Longer is lighter, right? And the other is how wide the opening is. Wider is brighter. So those, all three of those are probably the most fundamental things you need to know, even on a point-and-shoot camera. But remember, almost all cameras have a P mode. In fact, if I set this camera to P instead of aperture priority, the reason I set it to aperture priority is because for portraiture reasons, I want to play with the aperture to pull you away from the background. If I were shooting sports, I'd set it to shutter priority. I'd say, no, I have to have 1/500.
That's what all those modes are about?
Yeah.
They're changing these parameters.
Yeah.
On my old point-and-shoot, I used to mess with those things. I'm like,
right.
Things would change on the screen.
So can you pull up this? So here we go. I'm gonna go into. That's program mode. I'm gonna go into aperture priority.
Okay.
Remember, that means that I will be modifying the aperture. That is that number 6371. Notice it automatically modifies the other two parameters as needed. The ISO. See, it just went down. That means, oh, you're gonna give me more light. Okay, I don't need such a high ISO. And the shutter speed. Now I'll change the setting to say it's shutter priority. So the camera's smart enough. It's measuring the focus.
So if I'm moving, this is
if I set a well, see, it's not showing. It's too bad. It's not showing aperture, but it is changing the aperture as I change the shutter speed. And the ISO remains. Actually, you know what? It's remaining on auto. This camera is doing a little less automatic than I probably would like. Finally, I'll change it to P, and notice both those numbers go off, and it just automatically picks an ISO and a shutter speed. And it's going to pick a shutter speed as fast as it needs to be to give me a steady shot. and then pick the aperture that it needs to make that work. In this case, because it knows ISO is grainy and we're kind of in a low-light environment, it's going to set the shutter speed to the lowest possible setting for this lens. It decided that 1/60th is the lowest. It's set the aperture as wide as it can. This lens only goes to 5.6, and then it boosts it up by turning the ISO up a little bit so that we have a nice picture of IS. But notice this picture is beautiful.
Yes, I was,
and
there
very,
it goes.
We
get that when my eyes half open.
So there's some other things we can take a look at here. I'll do this again so you can just, this is what you're seeing through the viewfinder. There's some other things. You see that, we'll take it back to aperture priority here. So
okay.
We see aperture and shutter speed and ISO. And you notice there's a heart or an arrow, and then there's a -321 and +321. That's how many, each of those is an f-stop. So if I change, what I can do is I can, if I say, you know, this is a nice picture, but I want to make it a little darker, I can actually turn down the, I can what they call stop it down. I can take the, in other words, it's trying to get what it thinks is an optimal exposure, but I can actually manually change that. On a camera like this, this is the Olympus OMD, they'll have two dials.
This is
dials.
Your personal
camera. Yeah, this is my personal camera. There's two dials. And this is actually an interesting point I'll make real quickly. This is a true DSLR, digital single lens reflex. I'm looking through the viewfinder and optically looking out through the lens.
Mm-hmm.
All of these are interchangeable lens cameras. That's one reason you might want to buy this over a point-and-shoot camera, because you can buy different lenses. You can buy faster lenses. You can buy longer lenses that give you more close-up, or shorter lenses give you more wide angle. But if I look inside here, you'll see there's a mirror, that a prism that actually lifts up and gets out of the way. We need that prism so I can see through the lens, but it's in the way of the CMOS pickup. So when I push the button, and that's where that nice satisfying chunk comes from, the prism pops up out of the way so that the light can pass, instead of through the lens to my eyes, through the lens to the CMOS pickup. That's a true DSLR. We're seeing new designs that are called mirrorless designs. And this is a typical mirrorless camera.
It allows for those smaller bodies, much more
than a
point and shoot. Much
smaller. There's no prism. But I'll tell you the disadvantage. In fact, when you open this camera up, you can see directly to the CMOS pickup. That right there, that's the film. That is the CMOS that is taking light and turning it into bits. The disadvantage of this, the advantage is it's smaller, it's faster. In fact, I could take 9 frames a second because I don't have to move a prism out of the way. The disadvantage is I can't see optically through a viewfinder to the lens. Now, this does have a viewfinder, but what it has is a video tap in here. So what I'm actually seeing is a video picture through the lens. Some people don't like that
so
much.
Does that create any kind of delay when you're trying to
do the image? It doesn't look great. It can create delay. It's a lower resolution. You can also, of course, use the LCD as you would with a point-and-shoot camera. I think it's a worthwhile sacrifice, and I do think these Micro Four Thirds cameras are doing really great stuff now. The lenses are a little less expensive. It's a standard lens format. You know, when you buy a Canon camera, you have to buy Canon lenses.
Mm-hmm.
This has manufacturers, Olympus, Fujifilm, Panasonic, and others make Micro Four Thirds lenses, so you have a larger choice of lenses. I'm actually a big fan of the new Micro Four Thirds.
That was
format.
The thing that was holding me back from DSLRs is the fact that you have to get locked in. You're either going to be
right.
A Canon man, a Nikon man, or something like that.
You know what? They're both good. It's not so bad. And the good news is that the bodies are getting better very rapidly. And so what you want to do is invest in the glass, because optics are forever. And so you get good lenses. And then when there's a new body, you upgrade the body. And since it's going to be the same Canon mount, you'll be able to use those same lenses. Now, I mentioned crop factor. One more thing. Can I define one more thing?
Go for it.
Because it's kind of
important. Crop factor. What is crop factor, Leo?
So on a camera like the 5D, Canon 5D Mark 1, 2, or 3, or the Olympus, Nikon D1, or the high-end DSLRs, they have what we call a full-frame sensor. It's a 35-millimeter sensor. The length of these lenses in millimeters is dependent on the size of the sensor. So all of the lenses are generally marked with a focal length relative to a full-frame sensor. But this camera and this camera don't have full-frame
sensors.
Right,
that's that new trend that's going on right now.
They have smaller sensors. This is an APS-C sensor. It's about one-third the size of a full-frame sensor.
Okay.
This is about half the size of a full-frame sensor. This is a MFT sensor. Smaller sensor means less light. It means more grain. It's better to get a bigger sensor. So a full-frame sensor really gives you the best possible images, but we're getting better and better. But this is where crop factor is important. When you buy a lens for a full-frame sensor, a 50-millimeter lens is 50 millimeters in length. When you buy a 50-millimeter lens for this APS-C sensor, because the size of the sensor is smaller, you have to multiply the focal length of the lens by 1.6. So a 50-millimeter lens is effectively 80 millimeters on this camera. Because this sensor, and this is the crop factor, is one-half the size of a full frame. Mm-hmm. I multiply it by the inverse of one-half or two. So a 50-millimeter lens on here would be effectively 100 millimeters. It's a telephoto lens. So that's important to keep in mind when you're buying lenses, especially if you think you're going to go to a 5D from this T3i. These lenses that you're buying are going to suddenly shrink because you're putting them on a larger sensor. Does that make sense?
Yes. We've covered a lot of this on TNT Tech News today when it comes to these newer cameras that have full-frame sensors closer and closer. Well, it should be the exact same size as SLRs in the first place, which would make the lenses, you don't have to do any of that math.
A bigger sensor is always better, but it's also bulkier and more expensive. And in my opinion, these Micro Four Thirds, which should be, I mean, it's half the size of the sensor. And by the way, a point and shoot, we're talking tiny, much, 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 much smaller.
And that's why megapixels don't necessarily matter as well.
They
because
don't.
If
yeah.
your sensor size is so small, like I used to, when it came to HD cameras, there were these little tiny cheap ones you could get for like $100 a long time ago. And you would shoot with them and they would look like garbage because the image sensor was about this big. And what happens is when they're small, you're not getting any of that light in unless you are outside in a beautifully well-lit area.
Right.
Those things just don't work.
Well, that's why camera phones were getting kind of crappy images. And they're 13 megapixel camera phones. But the sensor's not getting any bigger. That means the pixels on the sensor are getting smaller. They're not as receptive to light. They're not as accurate. But we are getting better at manufacturing sensors. And I think in many ways, a Micro Four Thirds sensor, which is one half the size of a full-frame sensor, in many ways I'm getting images that remind me a lot of the full-frame images. There's small differences, but for a lot of cases, the differences are not significant. The biggest difference, ironically, is that bokeh I was talking about. The depth of field.
Right.
On the smaller the sensor, the less the aperture affects depth of field. So that's why on a point-and-shoot, you can shoot at a very wide aperture, and everything's still going to kind of be in focus. Whereas on a full frame, it makes a huge difference. On this, it makes a little bit less. On this, it makes even less difference. So the smaller the sensor, the less depth of field becomes an issue. Almost everything's in focus on a point-and-shoot camera.
Yeah, that's one of the things that makes it look different.
Camera phones, too.
Camera phones, even camcorders, right. They always have this thing. Everything looks in focus, and that's not the way great films look. That's not the way that great photos look. There's always that depth of field that makes... That's where your eye is working, right? Leo's in focus when I'm looking at him right now. Everything else is slightly blurry. Nothing looks like it's always in focus. That gives you that realistic look.
I like it. And it also draws the eye of the viewer to what you, the photographer, want them to look at. Hey, if you're taking great pictures, one thing I got to remind you, you got to back them up.
Absolutely.
You've got great pictures. I'm sure you do at home on your hard drive. Pictures of your baby, pictures of your wedding. You've got financial records on there. You've got email on there. There's guarantee you something on your computer you cannot afford to lose. And if you're not backing it up, I'm going to tell you something. You will lose it. You will. One day you'll accidentally delete it. There'll be a fire. The hard drive, always hard drives die. That's why a good backup solution is so important. And photographers know the best backup. My friend Peter Krogh, brilliant photographer, wrote the Digital Asset Management book. He calls it 3-2-1 backup. Every photographer should know this. Anybody who wants to backup, three copies, not one, not two, not three. I know people who make a backup of what's on their hard drive, then erase the stuff on their hard drive saying, I got a backup. It's okay. No, that's not a backup. It's one copy. One copy is never a backup. Three copies. Now that's a backup. Two different forms of medium. You don't want to have it all on hard drives, all on USB keys, all on DVDs. You know, DVDs fail. You want to have two different kinds of media. And finally, one has to be off-site because when the house burns down, so do your backups. If somebody breaks in and steals everything, they're stealing your backup. So you got to get it off-site, and that's where Carbonite is so great. It's automatic, so you don't have to think about it. It's continuous. Whenever you're online, you're backing up. It's unlimited, so you don't have to take all the pictures you want. And it's off-site, in the cloud, where it's safe as houses. Actually, kind of safer than houses. Carbonite.com. If you try it today, you can do it for 2 weeks. You don't need a credit card, just our offer code, KnowHow. If you decide to buy, you will find two extra months in your in-basket, just $59 a year, PC or Mac. They also have small, as you see there, small business plans, plans for external drives and so forth. One thing that's the same about all these plans, it's always flat rate, all-you-can-eat backup. You never have to worry about, oh, am I backing up too much? It's just one flat yearly rate. Carbonite.com, Mac or PC, you got to start your free trial today. Please use our offer code KnowHow so they know where you heard about it and so that you get two bonus months with purchase. Carbonite, backup done right. We've backed up all our nice images.
Yeah, and basically these images are getting larger and larger because you can shoot in RAW with these things. Carbonite's fantastic since
it's
unlimited.
You want to talk about RAW and JPEG? Do you know the difference?
I know a little bit about it. As far as let's do it this way. I know RAW, you get a lot more image data, light data,
right,
in each image. JPEG is compressed, and once that data is compressed, that data is gone.
Right.
So what you can do with the RAW image is a lot more post-processing, at least as I understand it. You can bring out different colors and shadows that you didn't even know were captured, which is always why your DSLR will probably kick your iPad's butt when it comes to the camera, right, because this won't shoot in RAW.
Yeah, all camera phones, all tablets shoot JPEG because the file size is smaller. JPEG is what we call a lossy compression. That means they take bits out. Theoretically, bits you wouldn't notice, but it's still not as good as the original. Also, the camera has to make decisions about the image. What's the white balance? What's the exposure? And once those images are burnt into that JPEG, it's pretty hard to go back. RAW is exactly what the camera saw. It's every bit that was gathered by that sensor preserved exactly, which means you can change the white balance. You can make those decisions after you shoot the photo and then compress it as a JPEG if you want to make it smaller, but you can always go back to the original. You're not losing a speck of information. Most pros shoot RAW, not all. I know professionals, in fact, Tamara Lackey, who is a great kids portrait photographer, she shoots JPEG because it's smaller and faster, lighter weight, and she's going to JPEG anyway. She trusts her camera. Cameras do a very good job, especially pro cameras, of making JPEGs. But most photographers think, I want RAW. The disadvantage of RAW is you're going to have to post-process it. The camera's not doing it ahead of time. You have to go through your pictures one by one and pick the white balance. I mean, they'll give you a guess, but you're going to end up processing almost every photo you take. And so that means a lot more time doing the processing. JPEG's great for most people. I am actually not a biased person. I think unless you're getting really serious about your photography and you're going to be using Lightroom or Aperture and really messing with Photoshop and really messing with it, shoot JPEG. Cameras today are very good. You'll be happy in most cases. And boy, it's a lot smaller. But you're right. When we're shooting probably out of this camera, this is a 13-megapixel camera, Brian, something like that?
18-megapixel.
So in general, that means roughly 18 megabytes per image of data. It'll be 18 to 21 megabytes of data per picture. Per picture. That's and a JPEG will be 1.5 megabytes. So really, that's a lot of image storage. There are cameras. Most cameras who shoot RAW will shoot RAW plus JPEG. There's one reason you might want to do that. If you're importing into an iPad, since the iPad doesn't understand the RAW, if there is a JPEG attached to it, it'll use that. If not, it'll use the JPEG thumbnail. All cameras create a JPEG thumbnail. That's what you're seeing on the back here when you're doing the review. So there's always a little bit of JPEG image, but it might be a low-resolution image. JPEG plus RAW means you're getting the RAW. You're getting a good quality JPEG. You can import to your iPad, look at it, and then go back to the RAW at another time.
You know, I wanted to do this episode because I was curious about this.
Have I helped you at all?
A tremendous amount. A lot of this is, you just got to do it. And the weird thing is, this all came about because I was messing with my camera app, a special app that I got for my S3, Samsung Galaxy S3, and had all these extra functions. And I'm like, I should know how this works. I actually asked the audience on Twitter, what are the best camera apps that they have tried out? Well, you can find out how to answer that on Twitter. You follow me at Iaz, and I asked, what is your favorite Android or iOS camera app? If you answered with the hashtag TwitKH, I saw it. We had Corey write in. He said Camera Plus for iOS.
Everybody loves that. Yep.
Grid view, focus, and exposure, lock, timer, burst mode, all kinds of things. And obviously, by the way, that's about composition. If you got rule of thirds, it's when you put that grid on, I don't think it's a hard and fast rule to use the rule of thirds.
You know, it's not even the right rule. Well, you want to know about the rule of thirds?
Go for it.
All right. It is somewhat true that if you divide the image into thirds, a third, a third, a third, a third, that these intersection points, these four intersection points, are the best place to put things that you want to look at. That's somewhat true. So the eyes of the person in a portrait. Another, it really, it's just a way of getting you from shooting everything. You know what amateurs do. Everything's centered straight on, right in the middle.
Right there. That's
it's much more
shot.
Interesting. If I'm just a little bit off, that's the rule of thirds, but it's really not the right rule. The real rule is the rule of golden mean, which is a little bit more difficult to calculate. Some cameras have a rule of thirds grid.
Is that a swirly thing?
No. Well, yeah. It is, but what it's instead of exactly a third, a third, a third, it's an average or something. I don't know. It's not exactly the same. The golden mean is actually where you want to shoot. That is technically going back to the time of, I think, Da Vinci, where you want to put the object of interest. But nobody cares or knows about that. The real point of that grid is twofold. One, to know where your horizon is. You can easily fix this after the fact, but if you're going to shoot a horizon, you want it straight, not like that. And two, to put the interesting stuff kind of off-center, somewhere in the third, because that's a more interesting composition.
I think lower third's a little easier to figure out if you're doing that. Also, a lot of these things have
there
grids.
There it is, the golden ratio, 1 to 1.1618. See how it's different from the golden, the rule of thirds?
It's,
and there's the spiral that you talked
about.
That's
the golden spiral is what I've seen in other camera apps. Also, on when I asked folks on Twitter, there was at least one more response. Brent, what was the other response from a fellow we've got from...
On Twitter?
On Twitter, yeah. When I asked on Twitter, what were your favorite apps? We had Corey with
Camera Plus is good.
There's Camera Plus.
I like, Trey Ratcliffe has some really excellent camera apps. HDR Camera
Trey Ratcliffe
Plus.
Loves shooting and creating HDR images, and Ben wrote in to tell us he likes HDR Camera Plus on Android because... It doesn't. His Nexus doesn't offer HDR. And our friend James wrote in to say his best camera app is the stock camera app. That's on the S4.
Yeah.
He quite likes it. A lot of these things are very powerful at this point. We've also asked you know-it-alls, by the way. That's what I'm calling you guys.
Oh, I like it. We know how you know-it-all.
They're know-it-alls, these guys. You guys were on Google Plus. We have a Google Plus community at gplus.to/twitkh. That's the quick way to find it, or you can do a search. And there was a situation going on. One fellow named Hector said, "Hey guys, I'm having problems with not being able to pull my S3 notification bar to check messages. I want to do a reset, but don't want to lose my text messages. Any easy way to back them up and reinstall easily?" Now, because we have the best community in the world right now, our friend Dan Phillips, who's the moderator, one of the moderators at this community, wrote in and found a solution called SMS Backup Plus, which backs up your SMS messages to Gmail.
Neat.
From there, you can back it up later. You can restore it later. So you can totally wipe your phone and restore all your SMSs using this. And that's just fantastic. I love you guys over there because I'm finding this out too. Because I have my S3. I want to wipe it out. I can't stand TouchWiz. I'm going to be able to do this. Thanks.
There's some very good mods available for the S3.
What we're going to do an episode is a dual boot on that.
Oh.
Because there's some features I want to keep, but dual boot Android ROMs are coming
up. That'd be kind of fun.
It's going to be screwed.
So you can do the TouchWiz, the kind of stock ROM, and then you can put your own custom ROM.
Keep testing out different things.
Yeah.
The different custom ROMs a little later. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. And then also next week, by the way, if you guys are interested, what's coming up next week? We're going to make a Minecraft server with Chad. Chad Johnson will be here. And we're going to figure out how to build a Minecraft server. Because, he does that kind of Minecraft.
Wow, thing. That'll be fun. I look forward to that.
That's what we're doing.
Well, there you go. I hope I haven't made it all a big muddle. There seems like a lot to keep track of.
There's a lot of information, and that's why it'll be at once I write the show notes. twit.tv/KH. We'll have show notes for everything we talked about today. Links to everything. Links might be more helpful than show notes in this particular case. But we'll have them all up there. And if you want to see our old projects, you can check them out as well. twit.tv/KH for fun weekend projects if you want to do those things.
And if you're interested more about photography, there's so many places to go. Trey Ratcliffe's site is a wonderful site. Scott Kelby does some great teaching. Lynda.com has a lot of great photography. The good news about photography is this is a hobby that is exploding in the digital era. Everybody wants to be a better photographer, and there are a lot of great photographers out there who are willing to teach you, and lots of podcasts and shows to watch. It's really a wonderful time to get into photography.
So it's always great to have somebody like Leo who's doing this. He's got all these toys.
It's my favorite hobby.
It's great to pick your brain to find out how to actually use one of these things, and I'll be able to when my three-year-old is running, I'll know what to do with my camera instead of the portrait mode. No, that's not the one.
So now that you know how to use your digital camera, go out and take some pictures, okay? We'll see you next time.